Got to take a nice shot at Ted Price right out of the gate. Get that out of the way.
Let's go. Ted Price, what has he done really?
Yeah. You know?
Besides make a good podcast, I guess, which we're on now.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Oh, we're good?
Okay.
All right.
Welcome to The Game Maker's Notebook, a podcast featuring a series of in-depth one-on-one conversations between game makers providing a thoughtful, intimate perspective on the business and craft of interactive entertainment. The Game Maker's Notebook is presented by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, a member-driven organization dedicated to the recognition and advancement of interactive entertainment.
Hi, I'm Sean Vanneman from Campo Santo.
And I'm Amir Rao from Supergiant Games.
And we are here at GDC, which you can hear in the background, although it's pretty quiet right now, I think. We are recording a special episode of The Game Maker's Notebook without Ted Price, who could not be bothered to talk to such scrubs as ourselves.
I know. It's sad coming in here, having to fill the void.
When I came around the corner and you're like,
oh God, it's Sean.
It's not Ted Price, not even a little bit.
It's okay.
Oh, no.
Maybe you're like the next Ted Price.
I don't think so. I'm not a mind reader or a future teller or whatever, but
yeah,
it's not looking correct.
It's okay. I think we're supposed to.
They've been in, how long have they been in business? Insomniac's been in business since 1926.
I think so.
Yeah.
When games were made by hand and with carts.
Yeah.
I believe.
Oh, like Nintendo.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, they've basically been a ultra respected, high quality, on the bleeding edge of their genres developer since I had a consciousness of who developers were on console.
Yeah.
They made it through the all the console purges.
Yeah.
That like just eat up third party developers. I guess they're technically like first-ish, second-ish party, but
do you think about that? About
yeah.
Like how teams don't survive console transitions?
I think we're in the midst of one. Yeah. I know you and I have mentioned that in the past, but yeah, I think about it all the time, especially because I feel like Campo was the direct directly benefited from arbitrarily coming out at a really nice time in the console transitions.
Yeah.
We did incredibly well on PS4 when the game came out.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you about like sort of what numbers should I expect and like what's going to be the split on like PC and console.
Yeah.
And then it was just not that. It was very, very different. And it can lull you into a false sense of security where you go, oh, well, we're good. Like we can buck trends because we are somehow special.
Yeah.
And I think I felt that really arrogantly from 2016 to early 2017.
Yeah.
And now it's early 2018 and I no longer feel that way as we work on the new game. How about yourself? You have more data.
Yeah, but I feel like I similarly feel that one cannot discount the role of chance in this whole thing. You know, we started Supergiant in 2009, inspired by the big summer of arcade hits that came before us, Castle Crashers and Braid and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And this is really common, right? You even see this in AAA stuff where you start based on the current thing happening in the business.
Yeah.
And then release into a time when things are not like that anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, our big expectation was that since we were, you know, we were lucky to be chosen as the first game in the Summer of Arcade lineup, that, you know, the Xbox 360 was going to be the most important part of our, you know, relationship and where we'd have the biggest audience and have the most sales and all this kind of stuff. And it turned out over time in that first year, Steam actually ended up being more important. And that's something we could not have guessed at the time, because for us, there wasn't a bunch of data that said, you know, you should
especially then.
Yeah, yeah. In 2011, when the game finally came out,
right.
that's what you should be doing. And
you also wouldn't think of a game that's primarily played with a controller as being so dominant on a platform.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
I mean, now even you kind of go, oh yeah, like I mean, like a game like Cuphead is a great example.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
People got controllers. People are gonna find one.
Yeah.
They're gonna be plugging anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I kind of it's interesting because I think I mean, I have very few peers who run studios between 10 and 20 people mm-hmm. who have had enough success to where they can pay for their own stuff, and then also live with all the, like, you're a designer, like, you're not just like making deals and hanging out and watching people make games.
Yeah.
Like, if you go away, not only does a lot of the sort of studio director, all the studio director stuff stop happening, but levels and don't get made.
And that was the case for basically, you know, a really long time until recently when we finally decided to start growing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we hired some recent design and technical design staff, and it was really shocking for Greg and I to be able to go to DICE and then the game still was happening.
Yeah.
And the stuff was really, really, really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it feels amazing, but that's totally different than how it's normally been for us over our many years of just you know, you step away and a bunch of stuff just doesn't happen.
Sure.
You know, because all of us do more than the sort of game craft.
What's amazing is you're saying that you're able to step away and not just things happen, but the right things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's the power of small teams, right?
Yeah.
The creative chemistry or whatever that drives you forward, the ability of everyone around you to solve problems, it's usually not based on like a central leader in like a team that size, right?
Correct. Yeah, I think people really misunderstand that.
What do you feel like you do as a leader at Campo? Like, how do you conceive of that? Like, what is your model?
I think you're stronger in this regard than me.
Really?
I think, yeah.
But stronger, but how do you even think about it?
I think it's hard for me. Well, it's one of those things, right, where I could tell you how I think about it and what the model is and how I believe it is portrayed inside of the walls of Campo Santo.
Yeah.
But then you could sit, you know, Jane or Ben Burbank in this chair and they would go, well, actually.
This is how it really works.
He's kind of a clown.
Yeah.
And we're surprised we're all still employed. I don't know. I think there's sort of the two things that I focus on because, like, management in the traditional sense of constant feedback, like micro and macro assessment, and then the creation of structures to deliver guidance and course correct, is stuff that is a full-time job. Mm-hmm. But, like, I have two other full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So the thing that I try to get right every day is making sure that I care about the right things in terms of what we're working on inside of the game and what we're trying to accomplish as a company. And I'm communicating the value of caring about those things to everyone. And then communicating directly in, to other folks, in front of other folks, in a model that I'm hoping people start to replicate, whether it's through language or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can do that by example, then it's a really efficient way of leadership. I don't have to, like, I can do that while doing other stuff.
Right.
At the same time, you know, like, Supergiant's five partners, right?
The way our stuff is structured actually is, so the big strategic level decisions are made by a group of five of us. So me, Greg, Jen, Gavin, Andrew, and it has like that cross-disciplinary vibe because, you know, Jen's our art director and Greg's a creative director and Andrew and Gavin are both engineers. So that's how we like pick a heading basically for that kind of stuff. And then it's a lot of my job to help us coordinate and execute that.
Yeah. So I would, I think in just that, like, Jake and I co-own the company together, but that's mostly a legacy byproduct of how we got started, you know, and like there are other mechanisms inside of the company that elevate everyone else to like effectively like a partner in some some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
So, you know, I think we hire really senior people and we do everything as, obviously, there's like we never vote. And there's never like 11 people or Jake and I and 10 other folks vote about like what we should do or how we should accomplish what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But we get together in small groups and then as a whole team until we feel like we have enough heading and data to where I can go, if or whomever can go and execute on the decision that the room clearly feels is the right one.
Yeah.
And in terms of leading the company, it's usually me going out and then executing on that, because it's outside, what platform are we use? What platforms are we going to come out on, or whatever? Like what the who? Yeah. X, Y, or Z, anything that happens outside the walls. Whereas, you know, like when you think about, okay, we're actually going to re-architect the entire game and create some hard limits for ourselves in the way that, like, how big a level can be or the streaming technology we're going to use, then the same decision-making process will happen with the people who it impacts. And then someone like Ben or Pete will be the one who's in charge of executing it.
Yeah.
And so much of that stuff is like, if you're in charge of executing it, your vote's usually a little heavier.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like you're the one who's going to ultimately be responsible for it coming to pass.
Yeah.
So I think we're actually, I think, much more of an organic system than sometimes it sounds like you guys are, even though I'm sure, I mean, I don't mean to say that you guys aren't, but I'm always really impressed with the way that you talk about running the studio and your leadership style and your ability to codify it down to concrete methodology.
Yeah, I think it's less, maybe that's just the EA in us, because a lot of us used to work.
God, it is funny how, like, you guys are I'm trying to think, like, there's like if Gordon Gekko had like a secret altruistic brother who ran nonprofits and like, but had all the same propensities of his maniac brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you guys somehow took all these dark powers and retooled them.
Yeah.
To be,
I mean, we're not so, I think we are process driven, but we're process driven insofar as the process is made for the people there. So it's like, you know, we reorganize our process based on the game and what we're doing and where we are in the whole life cycle. The thing you're saying about like experts deciding is essentially the same way we work. You know, there's almost nothing. Like, I think the joy of small companies is the part where the people who have to actually execute or are impacted most by a decision essentially make it, right? Yeah. That's like, that's the joy and power. And a lot of that is born from the opposite thing happening, which is like the frustrations anyone feels at like a big company when the decision is made in another room that then kind of ends up crushing you.
Yeah. There's basically at our scale,
literally
no reason that should ever happen.
Yeah.
Like pretty, like if that happens where, oh, hey, we actually decided X last week. Sorry. Oh, you were doing Y? Bad news.
Yeah.
If that happens, I think at a company of our scale, like there's been a pretty critical failure across the board.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, what's the, I can't even think, so I'm trying to think, you know, we should get into stories or something, but I can't even think of a moment like that, but I can think of like 100 of them at EA.
You know what's funny is always, I can't think of any,
you can't think
exactly,
of any,
I can think of 100 of those that have happened to previous employers.
Yeah.
I'm getting good at saying previous employers, by
That's
the way.
Good.
To where, like, if you want to know if you want to know if I'm talking shit, you at least have to go to my Wikipedia
just
page.
Just Google it, guys.
But I can definitely know. I definitely have it happen to me on a micro level.
Yeah.
Where I just didn't realize that Jake and Claire and whomever had decided that things were going to be like X. And meanwhile, I'm just like in my own little world, typing my little words into my little computer. And then they're like, that's not in the game anymore. And I'm like, well, you know, I like to think that I just go, oh, but I usually just get really angry.
Get upset.
No, that makes
sense.
And then we deal with it. There's usually a good reason why those decisions get made. But that's, I mean, that's the byproduct of what I was saying before, which is just like ultimately I'm kind of doing too many jobs. Like I think I've been struggling with that. I felt on Firewatch I had to because we're so scrappy.
Yeah.
And now we're like scrappy still, but have a nicer digs, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where there's always that thing that people say in indie companies, oh, you wear many hats and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I hate that.
But there's no way you wear.
You only got one head.
Yeah, but it's true. There's no way you wear all those hats well, right?
Yeah,
it's like I feel like I also have three jobs, but at any given time, I'm doing like one of them hopefully well, one of them kind of okay, and then one of them not at all. And so when that's rotating through, you know, what does it mean? Because one of the things I think about a lot, actually, in this regard, is how often people who are in a leadership position at a studio end up stop working on the video game.
Yeah.
And so that's actually something I really admire about, like, Tim, you know, he's leading a studio and he's writing games. Yeah. And I think the wisdom is, like, at a certain point, isn't it in the best interest of your studio for you to be thinking almost exclusively about the high level and the health of your studio? Is it almost like selfish that you keep working on a game when maybe that's work someone else could be doing?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on who you, like, yeah, I honestly think
I still work on the game, like, so I have no idea.
I believe that I can add more value working on the game than I can trying to bend and crimp the armature of the organization to a shape that is the benefits people in seen and unseen ways.
Right, right.
Like, I know that pound for pound, if I am in charge of writing and directing the story content of the game, that we're going to make more money than otherwise. I would have already hired the person I thought could come take my job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do believe that.
Right.
I don't know.
So you don't feel like you're hanging on. You feel like you're the best
person. No, I do.
Position.
I still feel like I'm the best person. For that. Yeah. And I don't, I mean, I'm pretty self-deprecating.
Yeah.
But in this one regard, I 100% believe
you have the confidence.
I don't know. You have to.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, I have no answer to that for myself. I, you know, sometimes feel like, God, I could be doing more, you know?
Do you have any, so this is, man, I haven't asked you this yet.
Ask me.
In any form of our friendship. So I assume you've hired someone who's incredibly talented, because I know the way you think about things, and I know the sort of folks.
Yeah.
I know the bar it would take if to work at Supergiant.
Yeah.
Is there any part of you that's like, what if him or her makes me obsolete?
Oh yeah, it already happened. So, you know, we hired these you know, this group of people recently. So we were 12 for many, many years, and now we're up to 15, and. You know, I sort of had this feeling while I was working with them that, like, in that first week or first couple of weeks, wow, they're really good. You know, like, especially the person who I work very closely on the design side, thought maybe you know, I'll hand off most of this stuff the next project. And, like, a month later, he's already doing 2/3 of my job.
Right.
So, and he was doing it really well. I think that's just a testament, I hope, to at least a different kind of skill, right, on my part.
Sure.
Not just like a, it's not a direct transfer or something. It's like, wow, there's a founding myth here, for me at least, that, like, I need to be at the center of some design decisions or something like that in order for things to make progress in a certain way. And that myth is based on just the fact that we've just been doing it that way for three games. And
do you feel like You in the past, in talking to you, you've used the metaphor of kind of like a band.
Yeah.
And you feel like maybe you were a drummer who can now much more easily, like, hey, look, if we need someone to drum one night, I'm drumming.
Yeah.
Or, like, I can be drums on a few songs in the studio.
Yeah.
But I know that I can keep this band together in a much more, like, high quality way through management and production, or music production, which is much, much more creative skill than, like, being a project manager.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I'm still involved in all the, in my little piece of the game, but that piece has just gotten kind of smaller and more focused.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. I love the band metaphor. You know, I love thinking of us as a band. I love thinking about the stuff we do as albums, and I love thinking about what that means to the audience, like that the audience can join you at some point in your album releases, and, you know, that's going to be their favorite one.
Yeah.
And then they have this discovery of your back catalog and realize they like it more, or they like it less, or whatever.
Sure.
So that's always been appealing to me. It's always been a big part of why we want to stay small. And, you know, I think the reality is, if you end up wanting to both stay small, but then have a bunch of released video games that need to be maintained. You know, we make a lifetime commitment to all those games and all those platforms. So we just,
understood that.
Yeah. It's like,
I know that I will be thinking about and making sure that Firewatch is viable software.
Yeah.
When I'm retired.
Yes.
When I'm an old man.
You should be. You know, it's an important enough game that you, to do right by your players, you should just.
Like, there are people who haven't been born yet who are going to play that game.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to pay money for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got.
Fingers crossed.
I mean, it might sell more copies, you know, in the next couple of years than it's sold already, you know, and that's just the way. It's just the way things are right now. I think it's important to be small. For us, that chemistry has been really important. And having new people and integrating them into what we have has been like a really interesting and exciting moment for us. And I don't know that the band analogy works anymore, because you don't really, like, do bands get like a totally new instrument injected, played by a totally different person.
I was going to say, you guys are like Dead and Company now. You guys are like whatever, you know, like the big-ass jam band.
Might I'm like gonna, the I'm Flaming t- Lips.
You keep talking, but I'm going to tilt your microphone up.
Okay.
So I don't want to, I see it, it's falling like is a trebuchet. It,
yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, you see the Flaming Lips live, and they're like 50 people on stage. Some of them are just in costumes dancing. And maybe that's...
Yeah.
Maybe it's like the, it's a touring
band.
So
you're going to be the guy in the weird costume with the streamers.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you know, that guy used to play. Man,
I can still say, yeah, I can still say I'm part of the band. Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah. We've always used this. I've always used we. I don't think anyone in Campo would agree with me. I've always used a sports metaphor. And I just end up being like a player coach.
Yeah. Which also doesn't exist.
It did in the major league movies, or like in the 70s in the NBA. Yeah, we're playing in like a smoke-filled arena in Cal Hollow, like that era of the NBA.
So why don't we just want to say, like, we're game companies?
I'm a game, what do you mean?
Like, you know, we like the metaphors because it makes us feel something.
I think because, I think still folks, in terms of communicating it outwardly, in the what a game company is so different, like,
yeah,
you know, like what's the guy from Stardew Valley? Old Chucklefish.
You're talking about the guy who made it, or Chucklefish the publisher? You're talking about Eric.
Oh, right? Eric is what I meant. Yeah,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's a game company, but then like Ubisoft is a game studio.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
right,
or like
yeah.
Rockstar, whomever is working on Red Dead Redemption 2 or Red Dead. It's not called Red Dead Redemption 2. It is called Red Dead Redemption 2. I always wanted it to be called Red Dead Requiem or something. I wanted them to just change the third R. Yeah. They didn't do that.
So you're saying it doesn't work. We use the metaphors because it doesn't really describe.
Yeah. Well, I think also, I think generally folks who aren't in the games industry can't really understand what a game development studio looks like, as they shouldn't, because at this stage I've been in enough of them where they do all kind of look and feel the same. Doesn't matter if you're, you know, EA or Campo or like, you know, walk around the floor of Naughty Dog and I'm like, oh yeah, it's a game studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quiet in here.
Feel the sense of video games being made.
I feel the like the hushed urgency of fear. Yeah. It feels like a video game company. But I don't know. I think also like you have when you use the band metaphor, your primary goal is keep the band together for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because there is a creative alchemy here that you do not find every day.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
I don't know if I still feel this way, but when I started using the sports metaphor, and I have to see if I still feel this way, I think, but I felt like my job was put the most talented people on the team who wanted to play together, and then make certain decisions at the strategic level, like what plays do we run and what do we try to accomplish every night, you know, if you're playing basketball or something, that gives us the best chance to succeed.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's also because like I'm a competitive person, so the metaphors work for me or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really, being a competitive person in the games industry is like not super useful. It's not really a useful skill.
Do you think there should be more feuds? Do you think there are not enough feuds?
No. Feuds give me great anxiety. You saying the word feud made
it's
my
enough.
Throat tighten up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. But I do think there's something to be said where, and you know what? So a skill that I think I have, a skill that I think you have that we haven't hit on that I think is a freakish unfair advantage is the ability to identify talent that can work together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I think there's a chemistry / talent finding skill that I know, I definitely know you have. And I definitely feel like now that it's been 5 years and we have a slightly different crew working on In the Valley of Gods than we had on Firewatch. And I look at what they're able to accomplish and I think about how they came to be part of the studio and how they were identified and how we sifted through, whether it was applicants or folks, or at least, like, you know, sometimes we'll just make a list. Mm-hmm. Go, here's all the people in the world who are doing this job right now that we know of.
Yeah.
Should we just go after one of them? We'll do that, you know?
Yeah.
And our ability to do that effectively, we take a lot of pride in, I think. And I think it's like 90% of what makes us work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the components of creative chemistry are like really, really hard to like say what they are, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be really hard to say why it works. You just know when it's the right group of people over time and the fact that they still all want to work together.
Yeah.
And want to make things together. I mean, that's the thing I feel the best about. It's really interesting because it's like your experience of that feeling is just actually just to sit in your office while other people work.
100%. You just, some of the best, the most valuable time I can spend is just disappearing into the space of the office and watching the way folks get each other excited and the way that they're building upon each other's ideas. Mm-hmm. And for me to, like, in a very Machiavellian way, think about ways that I can recreate this tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, go, oh, okay. Like, there are certain things where, I mean, I do this all the time, where I will just pay attention and listen. And by listen, I mean just be around. I'm not like sitting there with my like hand on my chin going, I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
I'll just try to like stay adept of what's, or abreast of what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I'll watch, you know, Jake will say something and I'll see like a glint in Claire's eye. Like, oh yeah, I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, there'll be something. I'll have taken that and interwoven it into the design of a scene or a scenario or into the dialogue of the game in a way that I wouldn't have done had I not seen that glint. Mm-hmm. And then she'll go, oh shit. Yeah. When she experiences it, when I send over a little prototype or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I know what I'm doing. Like the entire time. I'm not just like, oh, you happen to, and I'm like, yo, you like that? It's like, no, it's like, I am out there like setting traps for my coworkers to surprise and delight them. Cause if we can do that, then like, they'll do that with each other. And if we're doing that with each other, then we'll do that with players and then we'll be successful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the sense that you've pulled a good crew together is like a, that's probably the thing that feels the best. I think that
it's the most durably satisfying.
Yeah, one of the things that makes me feel really good that Greg, our creative director, has said before when he gives interviews is that when trying to describe what I did was just said, you know, Amir is our Commander Shepard from like the Mass Effect series.
Did you just start crying?
Yeah, I wanted to, but we were at PAX and I was just standing next to him, so I had to hold it inside. But yeah, it's like, you know, I never really,
everyone makes their own custom Amir when they start.
Yeah, I wish. I never really thought of it that way because for me, I was just starting a game company with the people I like the most and who I, you know, Darren, our composer, I've just known since he was 8 years old. Like, his qualification was like a lifetime of friendship.
Sure.
He was also an amazing musician.
Right.
And turns out an award-winning video game composer and sound designer. I don't really know that when I hired him, right?
Right, yeah. If you were trying to replace him, the qualification would have to say 20 years of personal experience with Amir Rao.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And friendship and knowing how I can be and how to talk to me. So yeah, I think it's one of those situations where the pride I feel in the studio, there's definitely pride in the work. And there's definitely pride in the accomplishments and the fact that we're still doing it together after all these years. But it's just like the pride in the people and their ability to work together and like how good it is, how good it feels to be a part of that, how good it feels to know that I helped put that together.
Yeah.
That's definitely like, that's as good as it gets for me.
I completely agree. It is, everything is secondary, like everything where it's like, can we put, Will, if I could choose between two games or flying through the possibility space of the cosmos, and I can go, we're going to make that one or that one. And I know that one of them is going to result in like a bunch of praise and glory for the studio, mm-hmm. but the other one is going to result in like concrete benefits for the people who work there, mm-hmm. financially or long-term stability or whatever. I'm like, let's do that one because like once you like when you know like if you can do that and take care of folks and make them feel secure and take away as many of the sort of like things that inhibit you from showing up every day and doing a good job, whether it's financial stress or health stress or how many hours you have to see your kids stress, mm-hmm. and put them in a position to just do what they know how to do the best. Like, A, you're going to get incredible work out of them. And B, like, you just get to go home and feel really fucking awesome about yourself. You're going to feel like, okay, no matter how big of a shithead I was today or like how I messed this up or messed that up, over the long view of this enterprise, like folks' lives are good or better than they maybe they would have been if they worked somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that is the best thing. That is like one, that is better than anything.
Yeah,
I would take my name off of every game we ever made if I could guarantee the other part, the other thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah,
the ability to contour the whole project around the people who work there is like a, it's a special privilege, right?
Because for
the most part, unless you are in a position where you're self-funding or self-publishing or all these kinds of things, there's going to be all these other constraints around it. But I mean, actually, even if you're doing all those things, there's a ton of constraints.
Sure.
I guess it's just about the emotional intelligence and real intelligence and how to navigate those things when they come up.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been lucky. We have yet to be in that situation where someone goes like, I'm not really excited about what we're doing, but I can find something to be excited about.
Yeah.
And I mean, man, that is 100% counter to my experience for the rest of my career where you go like, I took great pride, saying like, I'm not super into this like design or this IP or whatever, but I'm going to make it something I think is awesome. And that's going to be what I have to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's great. And you should try, like, it's still a privilege to be able to like have a job, being a creative person on a video game. Nevertheless, like you saying that made me realize that I don't think, since we started and the maybe like 10 to 20 people who have checked stuff into Campo Santo Perforce have had to ever say like, I'm not super into this, but I figure out a thing that I like about it. Like, we're lucky that we're like, it's an incredible privilege to just, it was just interesting when you said that, it hit me like, oh wow, I haven't had that feeling or seen someone have that feeling in quite some time. And wow, that's like very lucky.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it sounds, you know, when we make new projects at Supergiant, we try to make stuff that's at the intersection of like the preoccupations and excitement of the people at the moment when the game, you know, begins, right? And usually that can often be like a massive reaction to whatever you just did. So the things, things that still excited you about what you just did and things that you're sick of.
I know, right? When you finish a game, two things are true.
Yeah.
You're never better at making the game you just made that you no longer get to make.
Yeah.
And also you are never, you've never been worse equipped to figure out what you should work on next. I really think that. I wish that like, I think like after about 18 months, you're back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make really sober decisions, sober and exciting decisions.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? To shut the studio down for 18 months?
Yeah, I guess so.
Port the game for 19
months? Yeah.
Send everyone away? Because we were like, we would never make a spiritual successor to Firewatch.
Yeah.
And now we're like 18 months later.
Yeah.
And we're all kind of in the back of our minds thinking, that would be really fun one day.
On the first thing you said, how fast do you think you can make a game with everything you know? From like on the day you ship it.
You mean how fast could we make
the game you just made?
Oh, Firewatch?
Yeah.
How long can we make Firewatch? How fast can Jane model stuff, basically? Like who does like whose job takes the most time? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's really it.
Yeah.
Like I can write Henry and Delilah as fast as my fingers can move.
Yeah, yeah.
I can
It's just one of those things.
And also with the like we also shipped that thing on a very old version of Unity compared to what we have now. And
update.
If Jane had pre-made 90% of the assets, like she was just like sous chefing all the different rocks and trees and stuff. 4 months?
Yeah.
I don't know. 6 months maximum. Months with if we were gonna surprise ourselves and add new features.
It's just interesting how much the process is like learning, right?
Yeah.
And then how much of the process you're saying after you ship a game is like learning. It's just like remembering what you would actually do instead of just reacting, I guess, emotionally to what just happened to you.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
I don't know. I say that. And then at the same time, it's like going on a really circuitous road trip. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, I've driven this. I've driven there before. We're good. I don't need the map. And then you're out there in the like there's crows and like hawks overhead in the middle of the woods, and you go, I don't think I knew where I was going. I could have sworn I'd been through here before, but going on day two of being lost, so maybe 4 months was a little aggressive.
Do you feel like you guys are better at finishing games or starting them?
Finishing.
We feel like we're better at finishing too.
That's probably starting. Good.
If you said
starting, just given your studio's track record, I'd be like, damn it.
No, that would be great. Then we could just switch. You could start the games and I'll finish them.
Dude, that'd be so fucking cool. Oh my God.
Just make it efficient.
Just wait for the Campo Santo Supergiant merger. You heard it here first.
Yeah. We could just do one then the other. I mean,
it would instantly become Lord of the Flies where people would kill each other.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If the creative chemistry matters, right?
Yeah.
Then it should mean that us working together would be really terrible.
It would be bad. It would be, who's your favorite band?
Who's my favorite band? I don't know. My favorite like indie rock band is Wolf Parade.
Okay. It'd be like them going on tour with the Golden State Warriors. Wouldn't work. Everyone's just like in the green room.
I would see that tour though. That is actually at the intersection of two things I like.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's hard to imagine a world in which you, for me, it's hard to imagine a world in which I do other things, much less.
No, do you mean go on long walks and read books? Or what?
Yeah,
mean?
That I have no idea what that is. Yeah.
You have to go on walks. You have a beautiful dog that needs to go outside and frolic.
Yeah, I have mandatory walk time.
Yeah,
so that part is really good.
You got that tennis ball flinger.
It's mostly the world in which I am not doing this.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
yeah. Like that's interesting because Jake and I have spent a lot of time talking about that.
Yeah,
I go like, oh, we're just gonna make this. We're gonna keep making games about with like 12 to 18 people for their next forever.
Is that the future?
Is that the future?
Yeah.
Will that make us happy? What will make us happy? Are we happy now? Yes. What are the things about our day-to-day lives that make us happy?
Yeah.
That stuff is, you know, and I think about that a lot. I think about that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the hard thing is in all these things is knowing what you want, right?
Yeah.
If you knew what you want, you would just go.
Sure.
Just go do it. You just go get it.
Yeah. And I think I think that a lot of it is just having a good dialogue with yourself all the time. Like if you have a good dialogue with yourself, it makes this job a lot easier because then you're able to have a good dialogue, or at least a confident dialogue with your coworkers and your employees.
Yeah.
Because you know, like I find myself walking through life, especially over the past 2 or 3 years, going like, all right, what am I doing right this second? It's like, you're going to go get a sandwich from that spot around the corner of the office. Is that what you want? Are you happy about that? And I think about that all the time too. Yeah. It's like I'll be like, you know, riding my bicycle to work and be like, okay, like you're riding to Campo Santo. What are you gonna do when you get there? Is that the thing you want to be? Are you happy about that?
Your leadership and yourself.
Is it gonna be good for the company when you do that?
Yeah.
Or is it something you're gonna be doing to make yourself feel better? That's actually gonna be a weight on the company, a drain on the company.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that stuff a lot. Where was I going with that? I don't remember.
Doesn't matter. We can go somewhere else.
Who knows? It literally doesn't matter. When the aliens come, this MP3 will have been destroyed on whatever devices it happened to have been downloaded on. And life and our work is effectively meaningless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually had that. I had that thought. Supergiant.
Really?
Not meaningless.
I mean, there's going to be like a thumb drive with your oeuvre floating around through space in the pod, the culture seed that we send out into the cosmos. This is what our people are capable of. And they're going to go, oh man, I love action RPGs.
Yeah.
When I get it.
Isometric. It's
the only way
it's
to
hot
make
in
games.
Space. Yeah. Yeah. Aliens,
it is because nothing in space is actually isometric. It's all
true.
Yeah. So
it's like a brand new
pretty novel. Yeah. Like, oh wow. Like you can lock shit down from one corner. I'll be goddamned.
Isometry. That's the other reason I guess we can't make games together. You are utilizing the third dimension.
In ways
which we are not.
You guys could though.
We could. I mean, we do 3D work right on the characters.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You guys are halfway there. Yeah. Isn't the animations on those guys 3D?
Yeah, those are all 3D. But they're spit out
90%,
of sprites.
90%, who cares? 90% of the way there. Easy. Flip that camera around.
Yeah.
New game from Supergiant, 3D. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
AIAS members.
Yeah.
You got Ted first... Price wouldn't have got that scoop.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I do think you do get to, like, I was talking to a friend. I was talking to Sean Krenkel from Night School a minute ago while I was walking over here. Their new game looks really cool. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, you know, and actually I talked to Amy Hennig about this too. I've been kind of like thinking about this a lot. And like the making Firewatch was kind of like winning the lottery, and not financially, although it's been financially successful. And just that you don't really ever get to make games like that that then are commercially and critically successful and also personal and also allow you to forge a dozen friendships with the folks who make it. Mm-hmm. And it feels very much once in a lifetime. And there's no part of me that's chasing that feeling again.
Yeah.
There's no part of me that feels like, oh, I got to do that again. I got to make another game that makes me feel like Firewatch or is as good as Firewatch or is blank or as personal or as whatever. Like, I kind of just feel like the monkey's off my back.
Yeah.
And I just get to go to work. And then the question becomes like, oh, if you had a monkey on your back or a chip on your shoulder trying to get something accomplished, or, you know, both, or either for personal reasons or for practical reasons, when you do it, it's very freeing.
Mm.
But then you're kind of left with, well, how do I spend the time that I have left as a living person? You know?
We're back to oblivion again.
Yeah.
We've circled right back around. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like that's an interesting kind of, it's a very, lucky phase to be in life. Go like, okay, well, how many games do I have left if I want to think I'm going to stop making games at X age, or I'm going to kick the bucket at X age? Like, how many? And you know, well, I think about that a lot.
Yeah,
is this one of them? You know, like, wow, In the Valley of Gods is going to be like one of the six or whatever.
Yeah, how many games you? How many games you have in you?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, games are weird that way. At least the games that you and I make, right? They take years and years to make, and so you can just do the division. So you really only have six?
I don't know.
Are you counting your previous work? Because then you only have like...
I would only really count The Walking Dead.
Okay.
I was kind of like, I was never really integral to the
other stuff.
Yeah, I was just like a clinger on for anything. I was like, oh, people are working on Monkey Island. Gotta get on that. You know, whereas Walking Dead was like, all right, well, starting this in the beginning, I guess. Yeah. Gonna be here on the end. Yeah.
So you have three more.
I don't know. Probably more. It depends. Am I going to be on that like John Blow logarithmic scale of like time? It's like, no, this one takes 22 years. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's doing a lot of cool stuff now.
Yeah. I didn't mean that as a way that as a slight. I just think like he is on the record saying his next game is going to take like 12 years or something.
Yeah.
I think.
I was not aware of that. I was not aware that I would have to wait 12 years.
Yeah, sorry.
For the next John Blow game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My buddy and I like 100% of The Witness together, and it was one of the most satisfying game play experiences in the past 5 years. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is such a fun game to co-op. Just sit there and stare at the same. We do like Steam screen share or whatever. Streaming. And just stare at the screens together. Oh, yeah. I loved it. So fun. Anyway, I don't know, man. That's a silly thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard.
You ride motorcycles. You may have no games left. We both do. We both ride motorcycles. Yeah.
That's
Holy
true.
Holy cow.
I guess. But, yeah. I mean, there's...
I have a question.
Yeah.
How would you feel about if you kick the bucket, your team finishing your game, like in an Eyes Wide Shut Stanley Kubrick situation, where like, I'll take over the movie.
That'll be great. I mean, they could easily, because I don't do the thing.
Yeah.
I don't do a thing that...
I guess it'd be tougher if, like, something... God, this is getting kind of dark. Let's move on.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna pick what would be the hardest person.
It's like, if you had one person were to get murdered in your company.
We have that conversation a lot. Not about who would be murdered, but mostly about, like, you know, what is the... What do you... Like, in a band, if someone dies, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right?
See, it's easier when I use a sports metaphor, because they can just be out for, like, the season.
Yeah,
they can have a... Yeah, Gordon Hayward... Ankle dislocation.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
We'll be back, though. Yeah.
That's it. I mean,
you don't get injured making games.
No.
No, yeah.
You know, I think part... Okay, so we're still in a dark place, but I think part of the implication behind the question of how many you have left is this idea, maybe true or false, that you will either get less good at it, or even the idea from Robin's best debut speech yesterday when Studio MDHR. Did I do that right? I think I did. The Cuphead people won best debut, which I think is an award you guys won.
Yes.
And she said,
wonderful things are in store for them.
Yeah.
Having won that award.
Yeah, exactly. And it was
seminal.
Seminal. and the thing she said is, like, these are the teams who are destined to be fucked because never again will you hit X high.
You know, I don't feel that way.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a part of it.
Yeah.
That is like, well, you had a really lucky moment, right?
Yeah,
you tasted
Metacritic 60s here on out. See if I big whoop.
Just gonna pump out the
big
sequels.
Whoop. Yeah. Don't even care. I don't know. I really feel that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I say that. I feel that way when I am speaking as Sean over the long view of history.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that way in the moment. It sucks to like put something out that people don't like. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No,
absolutely.
I think none of us want to do that.
But I mean, in terms of the day-to-day satisfaction, I'm not waiting to like it's not like a juice is worth the squeeze situation for me. I'm not like waiting for that hit at the end where the game comes out at all.
Yeah,
it's like Kevin Durant keeps using this phrase where he goes like, I just want to hoop.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want to hoop.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm out for 6 weeks. That sucks. Just can't hoop.
Yeah.
Like what? Yeah,
you just want to do.
Like, just want to, yeah. Whatever the game development of hoop is, which was a cooler word than make games.
Yeah,
yeah.
I want to do that too.
Yeah, man.
I think games are like
you were, dude. You're the you. If not you, then no one does because I feel like you are, at least in my brain, the person who like is in it to win it in terms of like the day to day. I go there to do the job, and I like doing the job.
Yeah, I think that's it's always been like. The end is just to keep doing it, like with this group of people,
sure,
for as long as possible.
Yeah, there is no destination. There is simply you really like being on the journey,
which is why we keep going to Oblivion because it means that like the Supergiant Games motto is just sort of like die here. You know, it's like work here until the end.
Did you tell that to these new employees?
No, I haven't.
Okay, cool.
This is not in the orientation packet, and I hope they don't listen to this. But basically, you know, I guess that's why it gets dark. Because you start thinking, well, if you're going to keep doing it, where does it go?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And where do the games come out on?
Who knows? The chip that you stick behind your ear?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be that.
I guess people get fearful about format change. You know, that's like the console transition and all that kind of stuff.
I'm actually kind of fiending for format change, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, weirdly.
Yeah. I wonder if, since neither of us are Ted Price... And he's seen so much
of that.
As
far as I can tell.
I wish we could ask Ted this question. Which is like, Ted.
Please write in to the podcast.
Call in maybe and let us know. Do you fear format change or having seen so many, does it just not matter to you?
Yeah.
It's all still just games. They're not on disc anymore. They're all digital.
Yeah.
Not digital anymore. They're somewhere else, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I never think about that. You just make the game, and then you kind of survey the landscape, and you're like, "This is where people play them now."
You don't ever think about that.
I mean, I think about the fact that we have an audience, and the audience probably keeps moving.
Yeah,
like because technology keeps changing.
Right.
So, I think about it more as like an audience question than a format question.
100%. Yeah, it was. I think the thing that comes after that.
Yeah.
That, like thinking about the audience is a single member of that audience.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they and what are they doing when they decide that, you know, Bastion 2 is what they want to spend their money on, you know?
Yeah.
And
a
how does
that
game
is not being made, by the way.
Just ever.
no, not Sean.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to help out.
There are no plans.
It might
this
be made
time.
Sometime. So you neither confirm nor deny the development of Bastion 2.
There are no plans currently to make Bastion 2.
Okay.
That's my PR answer.
Great.
Did it work on you?
I didn't know. I didn't realize you guys
planned. Did I feel relatable?
I didn't know that so much of your production was planned. I thought it was a lot of it was just impulsive. But,
So you guys don't know what game you're making when you're working on it?
No, of course. No, no one does. And if somebody tells you they do, they are full of crap. That person is lying right to your face and you should punch them in the mouth if they're like, I knew exactly what I was doing time.
Well,
it's like, you did not. Get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure.
We don't know. We knew it's in that. We knew it. Yeah, I mean, we know as much as we have shown.
So, when you're doing it, are you chasing feelings or are you chasing something else more finished?
Feelings and a polished product.
Okay.
Yeah, those two things combined.
Yeah.
We'll be in good shape. But the thing I was going to say is, like, I think format change is interesting in that, like, I have to think about where you are as a person when you've decided to play the game, and is it a $20 experience that you're downloading, you know, like 4 to 6 hours of? Is it a $60 game? Is it, right.
Oh, you're right about that.
All that stuff. I'm like, for the things that we make,
yeah,
that we, our model, the $20 indie model, basically, is more, other than the $60 disc model, is the second most kind of static, unchanged model of the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, is that good?
Yeah, I don't know.
Me neither.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Why don't you guys take a giant risk on something weird, and then we'll know if it's successful or not. Spend like whatever how many millions of dollars you got to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think
the canary in the coal mine.
Well, I think in general, right? You, if you feel like you have a compelling idea, it's risky and original, or
yeah,
you're trying to do something that your audience will like, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
it makes you very conservative on the other things. Right, it makes you really conservative.
Oh, about, I didn't think you were going to go that way.
Yeah, about like, okay, well, what's the where should we put it? Well, let's just put it somewhere where we think people
are. Right. So let's set it in the middle of the table so we can't get knocked off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's set a price that, you know, is a fair value and is not like taking a risk or whatever.
Yeah,
pushing a boundary. Yeah,
$24.99. It's like, what?
People have done that.
I know.
That's a real price.
You know how I feel about that price. Same as I feel about Ted price.
Yeah. Yeah.
That made no sense.
Full circle.
You know who I've never met?
People are going to miss us when we're
Ted Price. Never, never in my life. He seems so nice and smart. And like just sort of, yeah.
Why?
I interviewed at Insomniac before I worked at Telltale.
Oh, yeah?
To be a writer. And they interviewed me 3 times and I felt like I was going to get it. And then I didn't get the job. I was a puppy. I was a tiny little zygote.
Yeah.
And didn't get the job and I was completely crushed.
Yeah.
And then my plan was to quit games and I was gonna just try to be like a writer's assistant in LA. And mm-hmm. like I was living in LA, so I was like, oh, I'll go work on a crappy TV show and get somebody Diet Coke all the time and like learn to write that way. So I wrote a bunch of spec scripts, started writing my spec scripts, wrote my like episode of like Psych. You know, whatever. You always have to write your, you know. And those got me hired at Telltale.
Nice.
Whap. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Anyway.
I guess we all have to have one of those. I interviewed at Blizzard.
Oh, no, man. That's tough for you. Yeah, buying them keys, Amiral.
Yeah, I know. It's true.
Yeah.
I have a YouTube video you should all look up about how to successfully bind your hotkeys in Diablo 2. Has over 40,000 views and is probably the work I'm most proud of in my life. Everything I've done that we've been talking about included. Anyway, but I applied to Blizzard.
Amerigo Vespucci.
Yeah, that's
Amerigo. Sorry,
she's just outing me in every possible way. Sean.
Can you beep that? Whoever's editing this, do you edit this, Claudia? Yeah.
Just all right.
Beep, beep, beep. Sorry, it's a good YouTube.
Anyway, I totally lost. Oh, I
you were going at you interviewed a Blizzard.
I was interviewed a Blizzard. I also felt like I was getting really far. And then
had I done that, the only equivalent of this would have been if I made a Ratchet and Clank rap video and then yes. interviewed Insomniac.
Well, okay, so to be clear, I made that video out of love. Many years.
Completely obvious when you watch it.
Yes.
No one would make reason
would make it for any other reason. That's true. That video is pure love right there. Actually features Darren Korb.
So it's musically tight. Like it's I think like as a piece of music, it's like
it's
competently made.
It's his production. It's like the precursor to Transistor. anyway, so I interviewed there. I thought I was gonna get it, and then I didn't. And then, you know, a couple months later, I was talking to my dad about my future in my life. And I said, Dad, someday I really want to start a company. I was 25 years old, and he said, you should start one now, because if you fail, you'll just be 27. You just get another job.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's good advice, right?
Papa Rao coming through.
Yeah,
is wonderful advice.
Yeah, let us live and work in his house. And start Supergiant there.
Oh man.
And it's like
I didn't know that story.
Yeah, it's a good story. I mean the support of my parents has been like a huge part of this. There's always like the
support of your parents has been a huge part of our success.
Yes,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
Amir's mother did some very early legal aid work for us.
Yes.
For
Rima Singh.
Yeah, it was very, very, very thankful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think my mom is probably a more effective lawyer.
We have some. This is gonna get noisy on the mic. We're good. All
more
right.
effective lawyer.
We have some friends walking
for
by.
Someone else than for me, because like.
Oh really?
You know, she's very effective for me, but
yeah.
the protective nature of a mother who already wants what's best for you
right.
to secure your future, and she's also a lawyer,
right.
is a heavy defensive shield.
Sure.
Yeah. So I feel like...
she also knows all your weak points.
Yeah, exactly. So she knows how to get her way.
Yeah. Amir, it's like I have always told you.
Yeah.
Mom!
Exactly. It just resolves to that kind of
yeah.
that kind of fight. Yeah, but she's done great work for us, too. It's been... That part of stuff is really lucky, and I think they always sort of appreciated my success in this vague way, and then it wasn't until, like, Jamin Warren talked about Bastion on NPR, and then they finally got it. Like, it clicked for them, and they're like, oh, this is a thing that can bubble up into the world that they understand.
Right.
And then it sort of crossed over, and they always supported me, but I think that was sort of closer to the time when they understand that it was actually
meaningful. I mean, your dad giving you that advice, and then also the foundation upon which to start the company in terms of like, hey, here's the house and just do your thing.
Yeah.
Like, is kind of extra wonderful because he got to participate in your success.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
You know, and like, it's very rare that a parent or even a friend or anyone ever gets to do that. You sort of just say, I support you.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, it's more of a spiritual thing.
But, yeah.
That's great.
And it's those moments, I think, that we have them just generally where... It's like the out of nowhere generosity, and maybe from your parents, maybe you're supposed to expect it, but you can never expect something like that.
Certainly.
That ends up being like a critical moment in your ability to do the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
We probably all have a bunch of those.
Yeah. We had it with Panic for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just, for some reason.
Like, hey, we'll take a flyer on you guys.
Yeah.
Why not? Because you'll lose all your money. That's why not. Yeah.
Yeah. And you get those sweet parental terms of like, you know, it'll just be, support. Just love.
Yeah. Just love. You want to wrap it up on just love?
Sure.
Did Ted call in? No? Didn't
Ted,
call?
That's Ted too bad. Didn't call in.
It's almost like these mics aren't connected to anything other than that recording box over there.
Awesome.
It's good talking to you, man.
It's good to talk to you as well.
Yeah. You want to hang out later?
Yeah, let's do that.
Great. That's great. Thanks, guys. Oh, yeah, we should plug some stuff. I don't know, man. What do you got? I will say you should definitely follow the development of In the Valley of Gods at inthevalleyofgods.com/just like the Campo Santo blog. So you get at camposanto.com. We have a dev blog. We're super proud of the stuff we put up there. Follow us at Campo Santo. Don't follow me on Twitter. It's not worth it.
Yeah. I only follow cyber athletes and NFL players on Twitter.
That's so wise.
You will not get any information following me on Twitter. However, you should follow Supergiant Games. Or go to supergiantgames.com.
You should follow at Blitz Dota.
Yeah,
if you're gonna follow any esports athlete.
Yeah, if you want esports recommendations, I have those.
Blitz
but otherwise,
is great.
Supergiant Games. We have all our announcements, whether it's new positions we're opening or things we're working on or cool fan stuff. So you'll hear about it there first.
Later, dude.
Thanks.
That was really fun. I really loved that.
Was it good?
It's really good. I can't believe that I like learned stuff about you that I didn't already know.
Thank you for joining us for the Game Maker's Notebook. For more information on the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, our podcasts, and our other initiatives, please visit www.interactive.org.